crystal clarity in sonic bliss. Are you ready for CKUT? We're ready for you. 90.3 on your FM dial.
Here we are.
The New Spins Library.
Here we are at the New Spins Library.
Hey, Montreal. It's a great day out there. Welcome to the New Spins Library on CKUT 90.3 FM. We have an extravaganza for you today with four interviews, two from music and two from arts and culture. The first interview is with Karina Marquez Caballero Ultra K. Karina has an incredible quadraphonic experience to have at Factory Studios tonight between 7 and 9 p.m. The second interview is with Hoor Malas. Hoor Malas is a dancer who is performing If My Body Had a Name at the MAI, Montreal Arts Interculturel, tomorrow. The third interview is with David Noel. He will be playing in the theatrical piece Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors, at the Siegel Center, October 23rd to November 13th. 8 o'clock brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings Weather, and the fourth interview will come after that. Our fourth guest is Sheen Shireen Amir. Sheen is sharing her fantastic creation, the Iscat EP. After that, we'll visit the podcast called In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, where this week's question is this: is time travel possible? After some more music, we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
My suit just to sticking like glue. I mean, I'll always be true. I think I'm better than you. So what? You probably be thinking the same. We are just checking our games, just fixing the game. Business is freedom and you got some change. Money, it all depends on money. We could be friends for money, but I prefer not. It's funny.
Look at your hands, man. It's the part of the plan. Yeah, you the man. Well, you say the man. Say the man. So why would you do me like this?
We're both right, I got you on my mind. It's been there all my life.
Say the man, so why would you do me like this?
It's late night, we're both right, I got you on my mind. It's been there all my life.
So why would you do me like this?
It's late night, we're both right, I got you on my mind. It's been there all my life.
say the man. So why would you do me like this?
It's late night, we're both right. I got you on my mind. It's been there all my life.
If you want to discover new artists, you're at the right place. I am Anemone and you're listening to the New Spins Library on CKUT.
I'm proud to invite you to the immersive album launch, Heart in a Box, by multidisciplinary artist Karina Ultra K at Factory Studios on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022 at 7 p.m. You will attend an innovative quadraphonic performance of this album, produced, mixed, and mastered by Eric Turanjo, a.k.a. Tess Cuano of the Studios Conspiracy label. With us today, we have Karina Caballero, the Ultra K. Hi, Ultra K, and welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello, everybody there. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a while. I've been wanting to come and share my music.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be a musician.
Well, my name is Karina. I have a long name because I was born in Mexico City. I normally use two last names. So it's Marquez Caballero. Everyone knows me more by Ultra K here in Montreal. It's more than two decades I've been living in this beautiful city. I was born in Mexico City. I've been living here for more than half of my life. But I definitely think me, as everyone else, we all come from the stars. So we're just here like for a little bit. But if you ask me for my background and like, who am I? I'm in this Ultra K, and this Ultra K character that I have been working and singing on for a while now.
Where did you grow up and what happened during your childhood that changed you into the person you are today?
As I said, I spent my life in a big city. Mexico City is one of the biggest cities in the world. I come from a family of musicians. So my mother is a drum player and a singer. I guess the beginning of me wanting to create was inherited, like something that would come naturally to me and the way I was living. But I think what really changed my view of sound, like, because I always knew that existed, but I never actually felt the need to make music, because my mother would do that again very naturally. So I think what was the most remarkable moment was when I learned how to record myself, when I actually went ahead and discovered that, you know, the headphones, when you actually connect them in the headphone, but in the output, you could actually sing and hear yourself by using the little, like, inverted microphone on the headphone. So I kind of discovered that by myself, being very little, maybe 5-6 years old. That changed my life completely. I started to do my own commercials and inventing my own products. I could spend hours and hours recording myself, just singing and talking to myself. And that's really remarkable.
Where did you go when you created Heart in a Box?
Heart in a Box is really a two-country album. I became Canadian just in 2019, a little bit before COVID happened. Regardless of a nationality, you know, the time being here had made me Canadian, even if I was not legally accepted as a Canadian. Now that I feel Canadian or I have a document, that kind of was an accomplishment for me. I never thought it would be like that, to be honest. I waited forever. For me, it was just a paper to have. But in that specific year, this came to me as a, you know, a normal time that you need to wait for doing this paperwork or that paperwork. But it came to me. And from that moment, I couldn't stop moving because all my life started to be a little bit shaky. My father got sick of a cancer that was very aggressive and almost terminal by that moment. So it kind of broke my life in two. And I went to Mexico for around a month and a half, a couple of times. So I couldn't go away because I always had my job here in Montreal. But it was composed in the two countries. It was really something that, even if I didn't want to, it was coming out. And the situations and the circumstances I was going through, COVID and all this personal, you know, difficult moment that I was going through, put me to start to compose here and there. The instruments that I would have in Mexico wouldn't be the same instruments that I would have here in Montreal because I'm traveling, right? So I would be able to maybe have my little machines or my computer, but I did have other machines that were over there that were like all dusty. All my aunts and uncles are also musicians. So they kind of lend me all their equipment and I couldn't stop creating over there. So that was a very special moment for me because there were instruments that were originally from the 80s, from all my childhood. My uncle has just kept that in a box. And that moment he's come and says, okay, if you want to play with my instruments, you can use them. It's going to be fine. Of course, I did that. And then it started to flow. It started to really flow. I remember I made, well, most of the lyrics were composed in Mexico. But then there's a couple of songs that that have this, you know, ring of old machines that I brought back to Montreal and kept on recording. Like I rearranged all the music once I got here in Montreal with this person you mentioned that's my amazing master sound. That's Eric Tourangeau. He was really a good friend of mine for years and years, but we never actually came together to work for real. So that is it. I went to Mexico by circumstances, but I also composed here in Montreal, and there were a few others that were also considering Val David, you know, all the surroundings of Montreal. And you take that weekend and you go to the chalet and you keep on doing stuff here and there. But I could say that mainly it's 80% in Spanish because of that, because that was really very close to my country, my family in that moment of my life. And I also felt that I never did that before. Like I never actually focused on making something for a purpose. So that's what it is, Heart in a Box.
What went into creating this innovative quadraphonic performance that you are performing at Factory Studios on Wednesday, November 2nd?
Well, again, Eric Tourangeau, it's my angel. I call him Eric instead of Eric because his ear is like a magician. This guy, it's a part of a team at Moog Audio Studios. So he's worked all his life for audio and sound. He's got his own equipment. You can imagine all the network of amazing artists he knows. He's dedicated his life to masterize. He's a guy that would be often working with all the Quebec artistic field in terms of mastering or remastering music. So it was kind of like, again, circumstantial. We were friends. We decided to do it. We had the time. He lost his father too during this process. Like, we both lost our fathers. That remarked a lot too. Like, that was like coincidence, a strong coincidence. So that led us to go one step further, because we had the album pretty much done by a year ago, but we were not satisfied with, you know, certain things that him, like he on his side, professionally talking, he would hear, you know, and I would be just like, okay, well, I trust you. If you want to go ahead and rearrange this, let's take the time to do it. And I'm glad we did, because it's thanks to him that we really got into this innovative way of positioning the show. Like, I've always been a performer, but I've never had an equipment or a person who's going to help me out behind, other than just connecting, you know? So this person is really like a new level of creation in my research. I think Eric opened that door, and at the same time, I opened another door to him, because he has never worked with someone that was also a multi-instrumentalist or someone that could also lead with technology at the same time. That's the reason we did the Quadrophonic experience, because today they call it Dolby Atmos. So the Dolby sound is what we hear in the movies. The latest innovation, it's called now Dolby Atmos. And so this is extremely expensive. That's the only thing. But it's the equivalent to have your surrounding system in the best way equalized. So what we did to, you know, get close to that level of quality, because we definitely don't have that support yet or that much money to invest in such a show. So he said, well, we're going to do it as beautiful as Dolby, but we're going to have to work on a different quadraphonic mixing. So the guy, on top of have produced the album with me, he has been working on the last 2 months to make all this mix it, to make it really quadraphonic and make the experience a real surrounding system when people's going to be there next Wednesday.
May we listen to some of your music?
Yes, yes.
This is Cry Me a Song on the New Spins Library.
Llórame una canción. Una continuación de lo que era yo.
What is the VR performance that you're putting on through Nomad?
This was a real experiment. I have worked with Nomad for a while now. I was part of a collective for this specific project called All We Have Is Now, that produced by Jason Roddy. And from that time, I got the chance to really start to improvise more and more while I was playing live. This was a project that really opened me the doors to be myself, but in a collective way, because we were a team of 10, 15 people. So after that, I guess, considering all this time for COVID and all this pause and break we all had, I got back to school. That's another thing that happened to me during this time. So I needed to learn more ways to express this idea to be just live playing. I was kind of bored of just, like, you know, making a show and playing, and or often confused with a DJ because you're all alone there and you don't have a band, so they think you're a DJ, but you can still play the DJ. But I guess what I'm trying to say here is that it's been a full evolution to what Nomad opened that day for me, because what I did with Nomad was practically put all together all this experience I acquired for the 10 previous years doing performances live. And I was able to finally, in Nomad, put it together. This is a place that it's a very big place. It has very tall ceilings, and it's perfect for the type of performance I'm doing, because now I'm not only, showing my music and my visuals, I'm inviting the audience to participate with me. So this is what Nomad did. Nomad Live has built with me this community of interaction. They are currently running a project for Slow TV that I'm also invited to. So we're really taking care of the visual and to take time to watch things. You know, I think people lost a little bit this stillness of not only just enjoying and having fun and party, but just really listening and understanding and interacting with the artist. I think there's a big wave of strong music and dance music that's also fantastic, but it's kind of neglecting what could also be what we used to have, you know, in the performance from the 70s, like all that part of getting and more contact with the audience. And now what technology allows me to do is really involve also the devices, you know, like get your phone, get your tablet, and people love that. So I think it's part of the evolution to what we created starting in Nomad. It started with a simple theater kind of presentation, and it became now a form of new expression for me.
May we hear some more of your music?
Certainly. Please.
This is from another time on CKUT. Thank you. If our listeners want some free listening time, more information, or to buy your music or event tickets, where should they go?
My main platforms are Instagram and LinkedIn. So you can find me on LinkedIn with my full name, Karina Marquez Caballero. But the simplest and easiest is Karina Ultra K. And it's Karina underscore Ultra underscore K. Of course, Karina with a K, people. And Instagram has this platform of creators that's called Spark AR. So if you visit my profile on Instagram, make sure you tap on the little Sparks logo. There's a little icon that allows you to see all my work for filters and augmented reality. And it's public and it's free. So you can just load them and use them and share them to have fun. Some of them have sound too.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Karina Caballero speaking about her music and VR work. I'm your host, Sheila Ferrando. From November 3rd to 5th at MAI, Montréal Intercultural, If My Body Had a Name reveals a female figure navigating her way through a conflictive journey within a flux of vulnerabilities and physical discord, ceaselessly renegotiating the habitual hierarchy which places mind over body, a research that plays within that duality's delicate boundaries where borders merge or dissolve. With us today, we have Hoor Malas, Syrian dancer in Montreal. Hi, Hoor Malas, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thank you so much for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you became a dancer.
My name is Hoor Malas, and I'm a Syrian dancer who is now living in Montreal. I started dancing when I was 8 years old. I was in Damascus and I started with ballet school. And I remember before getting into the ballet school, I was sitting, well, I was, I think, 7 years old, watching TV with my father. And then there was a classical ballet on TV, so small and short that I went to the screen and I pointed at one of the ballerinas and I told Dad, this is what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of was the first thing that got me into dance. And then through the ballet school, I was introduced to, of course, classical ballet, modern dance, jazz, character dance, and eventually contemporary dance. And I continued, so I did my BA in dance in Damascus, Syria, and at the Conservatoire, where there is a dance department there. And after I graduated, I went and did my diploma in contemporary dance at the Northern School of Contemporary Dance at Leeds in the UK. And then I went back to Damascus and I started teaching at the same conservatoire where I studied. Also through my school years, I started a dance company, a contemporary dance company with a colleague of mine, where I also worked for 10 years. And then after that, I went on my own way. So I started choreography around 2014, I think, something like that.
When you were growing up, what did you do that was not dance that inspired you to create If My Body Had a Name?
That's actually a very interesting question because dance is all I did when I grew up. So I was in school, but I was dancing. And then after school, I was just dancing. So basically it was dance all over in my life. But the thing is that I think that does the link between why this piece is now exists and how what happened through the years that I grew up is that I was always fascinated with body language. So I always used to love watching people move or watch people walk or watch people talk and just see how they express themselves. And I think deep down, that was like the small seed that led to this piece existing today.
What is the story that you were telling in your dance performance, If My Body Had a Name?
Well, this piece started a year ago almost, and I think now it has so many layers, but the source or the trigger for this whole piece was I was listening to an interview by an educator, Sir Ken Robinson, and he was talking about education and children and dance. And so he was describing that education always just was concerned so much with the head area. So it was more like math, languages, everything that was up. And so he gave an he said as if the body is just a transportation for the mind to get the mind from one meeting to another. So for me, that was like the light bulb. That was like, oh my God, this is so interesting. And this is how it started. And from that, I started reading and researching hypotheses about they call it the body or the mind-body problem in psychology and philosophy. And there was so many theories about these, how these two worked. Do they work in parallel? Do they overlap? Are they separate? Who does the decisions? So this whole hypothesis about what happens and who decides what. And then with the advancement of science, of course, in medicine and neurology, there were so many experiments about the gut feeling, and which they started to call your second mind, basically. And through experiment that they noticed that there is a chemical reaction in the body that happens before you actually make a decision. It's very debatable still. I don't think there's one correct answer. So through this whole ground, I would say, I thought about, okay, so what does this mean for me as someone who comes from a different culture? And in that culture, what are the elements that I can use to understand where I come from? So I turned into body language, or more like gestures. So what does these gestures, that we have a certain gestures that we do that have a certain meaning. So what do these do to the body? And so that was also another kind of layer to what this piece was about. And now after a year, it feels closer to pointing out a certain point in my personal history and using these through art to understand where I come from and where I am right now living in Canada.
Who else worked with you on this production? What did they do? And what are their backstories?
I started creating this piece with a friend of mine who's Shadi Ali. He's a music composer, an opera singer, and a musician. And we went to the same school. So when we started rehearsals, he lives in Stockholm and I live here. So the whole creation process was through Zoom, and it was also obviously COVID. So traveling was not super easy. So what we did was we recorded all our rehearsals. But during rehearsals, we had so many discussions about this idea and how he saw this relationship and what he felt about it. And so the creation, it was so much together, not me doing the movement and then him putting music on it. So it was really just together that we created this music, basically. And later on, I started working with Neil, who's my rehearsal director, and who's a very good friend and a beautiful performer. And with Neil, I started understanding what this work means and how to clarify the process and how to overlap all the ideas together. And Marco Croteau, who is the lighting designer, that also, after discussions, he started imagining what this piece would be, because basically the setup is very simple. There is a body, there's a light, there's a music. So that was my initial idea, how to make it as nude as possible. So we don't use big costumes or big decor or anything. So we just keep it very, very simple.
May we hear 4 minutes of music from If My Body Had a Name?
Of course.
Yeah.
does this journey in dance take you next?
This is a very good question. I think, actually, I feel that this piece has planted a seed in my artistic practice, or maybe crystallized the idea of my artistic practice of basically, because I've always used my personal history as motivation for my work, but now with this idea of how to use that personal history to create links between the society I'm in, society I was in, and my art. So I feel this piece has opened the door to a whole new world of exploration and research that is really about identity and about belonging and about understanding limitations, whether I'm the ones that I've lived and the ones that I'm understanding right now.
What is the run for If My Body Had a Name? How much does it cost? And where can we spend our ticket and go see it?
Well, it's going to be at the May Theater at Thomas Street, and it's going to run for 3 days. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, next Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So 3rd, 4th, and 5th of November at 7:30. And if you'd like to know more, you can visit the May website at www.m-a-i.qc.ca. Or if you're sure that you want to come, which will be great, just visit Bietrie at m-a-i.qc.ca for tickets. And the tickets range, they have three kind of categories. So the regular is at $28. The reduced for students or over 65 is at $22. And the Accès Montréal is at $25.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to Hora Malas speaking about her dance production, If My Body Had a Name. I'm your host, Sheila Ferrando. From the director of P.F. Dietrich's FKA The Angel and the Sparrow, Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors, is a lightning-fast, laugh-out-loud, irreverent farce that combines classic horror fiction with all-out silliness and satire. Five world-class actors nimbly tackle dozens of zany characters in this exciting romp that is imaginatively staged and filled with magic and special effects. Dracula's antics are guaranteed to raise your pulse as you emit blood-curdling screams of laughter. With us today, we have David Noel. Hi, David, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be an actor.
So my name is David Noel. My pronouns are he, him. I started working at the age of 15. I grew up in Quebec City, and there was this big production of Les Misérables at the Capitole de Québec. Quebec City was celebrating 400 years, and they had this very big production, and I auditioned for that. It worked out. I played Gavroche for 2 summers, and that's how I fell into the world of professional acting and where I really discovered that I loved it. I was bitten by the bug. Before that, I had taken sing lessons and piano lessons, but it's really during that production that I discovered how amazing to play was. Like, and to dive into this story where I was 15 and I was with, we were maybe 25 or 30 cast members. We were a big, big, big family. And just to dive into this story and see how everyone's putting so much effort to make it as believable as possible, it captivated me. And then after that, I did some TV work. I did other productions, both in English and French. And when I was 25, I didn't have any projects lined up. So I auditioned for NTS, National Theatre School, and I got in and I graduated in May 2022. So I'm a fresh graduate from that program.
Why did you decide that you wanted to play in Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors?
So my agent at the time sent me the breakdown. It's always been a dream of mine to work at the Siegel ever since I saw the first show there. And I've seen quite a few. And there's all this thought in the back of my mind, being like, oh, maybe someday. but I didn't know if it ever happened or not. And I saw it was a comedy. And if there are two things that I discovered during the first waves of the pandemic, two things that I was yearning, yeah, that I discovered that I was yearning was, first of all, human connection, and second of all, comedy, release, laughter. And this project really brings those elements together. And so I am more than happy to be a part of this really wonderful production of Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors.
What part do you play in Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors? Who acts alongside you and what roles do they play?
So I get to play Mina, who is the less attractive, less intelligent, but still hopeful and filled with dreams, daughter of Dr. Westfeldt. I also play Dr. Van Helsing, who they call upon to help solve the mystery and try to track down this monster creating all this mayhem. I play with a wonderful cast. We are five actors in total. We play, I don't know how many characters, at least a dozen. So there's James Daly that maybe some of your listeners have seen in Mythic or Master Harold and the Boys at the Siegel Center for Performing Arts. He plays the very sexy and narcissistic yet playful Dracula. I play alongside Naomi Gebulana, who plays a role in the very strong, spirited Lucy, who Dracula is more than smitten for. I play also alongside Colin Simmons, who plays the very eager and earnest and anxious Jonathan Harker. And last but not least, we also get to play with Ellen David. And she plays the roles of Dr. Westfeldt, his patient, Renfield. So she plays doctor and patient, and just watching her perform and make those quick changes make it so worth it.
What is the story you're telling in Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors?
So what's interesting about this production is that it's Dracula like you've never seen. Gordon Greenberg co-wrote this with Steve Rosen. They a very loose adaptation. So yes, we follow the story of Dracula who moves from Transylvania to the British countryside. Obviously, he's a vampire. Things happen. They call on to Dr. Van Helsing, as I mentioned earlier, for help. But what I love about this production is that we're in the genre of Monty Python, Mel Brooks. It's laugh after laugh. It's full of magic and surprises. And it's extremely smart and witty at the same time as well. Even though it is a comedy, the dramatic stakes are extremely high, and the message underneath all this zany, comedic, fast-paced romp is this idea of what is important when Dracula, who's immortal, has all the time in the world. What do we do with that time? And what it allows us to reflect what really is important in life, and you'll have to see for yourself.
May we listen to a couple of minutes of audio from Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors?
Sure.
Lucy!
Count, you're all right. Oh, thank heavens, I thought Renfield must have gotten to you too.
He did, but I managed a narrow escape.
Can I offer you something to drink or a bite to eat?
I had a bite in Saltwick Park on my way over.
There are restaurants in Saltwick Park?
Lucy, I needed to see you again, to be near you. I have thought of nothing else since we last spoke. I know it now. You're the one. You're my medicine, Lucy.
Count, what are you doing?
Giving you the chance to experience the world with someone as fearless as you are.
I'm engaged to be married. This is inappropriate. Dangerous, even.
And you are drawn to danger, are you not?
Within reason.
Reason has nothing to do with it. We're the same, you and me. You're excited right now, aren't you?
Count, please.
I have been waiting for you for centuries, and suddenly here you are. Everything I dreamed. When Jonathan showed me your photograph, my blood went warm. My arms felt weightless. My head was swimming. That's why I came to Whitby, for you. That's why I bought Withering Manor, for you. That's why I turned my life completely upside down. Not that it's an uncomfortable position for me, for you. I cannot pretend that we weren't meant for each other, and you know you can't either. Be my bride, Lucy. Stand next to me. Preferably on my left, because I'm told that my right is more attractive.
This is insane. I have to go.
Not yet.
Let go of me, please.
Why? Because it feels good? You said it yourself. Venture past your fears.
But
live in the present.
Stop it. Stop it. This is wrong. Jonathan
is a coward. know what you want, what you need. Come with me. I can give you an extraordinary life.
What is the run for Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors, and where will it be playing? What's the cost?
We just recently opened, and we play until November 13th at the Seal Center for Performing Arts. I know that regular tickets are $67. There are also group, senior, student, under 30, industry, and rush discounts available. It'd be good just to check out either the website or call the box office to find out more.
Will Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors, be playing over again in future years?
Nothing is official yet, but I do know that they are eyeing for Broadway. This could technically be a pre-Broadway tryout. This production has been played in Florida, and there's a production just recently in Albany. The show is just getting better and better and better. And Gordon Greenberg directed the two previous productions and this one as well. I strongly believe that this has Broadway potential. We'll see if it happens. I wouldn't be surprised. So I would urge everyone in Montreal to come see this. It's great for the whole family. It's great for a night out. And who knows, it's great to see it before it actually hits the Great White Way, if ever that happens. But I have a feeling. I have a good, good feeling that, yeah, it definitely has the potential.
If our listeners want more information or wish to buy your event tickets, where should they go?
Call the box office. The number is 514-739-7944 or visit siegelcenter.org.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to David Noel of Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Oh, York, this is Democracy Now!
It is not just affirmative action that is under consideration today. It is the trajectory of our future as a democracy.
The Supreme Court's conservative majority appears set to end affirmative action in college admissions. We'll hear excerpts from Monday's oral arguments and get response. Then, New York has agreed to pay a total of $36 million to settle lawsuits on behalf of two men wrongly convicted and jailed for decades.